You're listening to the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. Here, we'll help you unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship and self-development. This is your host, Alex Quinn. I'm a full-stack marketing executive and global keynote speaker. Get ready to get real-world knowledge from top-level entrepreneurs and world-class business leaders.
Hey guys, Randy Zuckerberg here.
Hi everyone, it's Neil Patel, and you're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle.
This is the motherfucking CEO, Andy Frisella. You're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle with Alex Quinn.
Become an authority and thought leader in your niche. Join a free private community of entrepreneurs and professionals looking to grow their business and optimize their performance. Get easy-to-learn resources and materials that empower your personal and financial success. Easily accessible for free on desktop and mobile app. Go to hustleinspireshustle.com/app to access now. That's hustleinspireshustle.com/app. Enjoy the rest of the episode. What's going on, everyone? This is Alex Quinn, and you're listening to the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. On today's episode, we have Andres Ospina, head of business development at Family Office Club and managing director of PitchDecks.com. He's a connector, networking and events expert, and specializes in communications and sales. What's going on, Andres?
What's going on, Alex? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, man, we've been planning this for a while, huh?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I got to bring you up in Miami at the Epic Talks event. So that was awesome to be able to share on that stage and hope to bring a lot of value to this stage.
Man, let me tell you, give everyone some context. Andres, and shout out to Melitza as well, but put on a really, really great event last year. I believe it was the last event of the year, right?
Yeah.
And you guys invited me to speak. It was so great. I loved the vibe, the energy. Everything was extremely well organized, and we got to connect with some really cool people. And I want to give Andres a shout out for always being super cool and being a connector, understanding the value of long-term business relationships and bringing people value, and just in general, looking to help other people. Andres has been very helpful to me. I found out about Family Office Club through you. I got a chance to attend an event in Miami, which was really, really cool. Step into the game with some really, really cool people that are doing some amazing things that I hadn't come across before. And I just love what you were doing, man. So I thought it would be great for you to come on the podcast and talk to us about your experience, what you're doing right now, because most people ask me, hey, how can I build a pitch deck? What do I need to build for a pitch deck? How can I get noticed? How can I get a VC to notice me? How can I get funded? And that's not the route I'm an expert in, but you are, man. So thank you for being here today.
Yeah, no, thanks, Alex. And it's what we really love to share at the Family Office Club. My CEO, Richard Wilson, you know, he's actually doing a webinar tomorrow on, for beginners of capital raising, to really understand the science behind it, and get over some myths about it, and then also how to do it the right way, because a lot of people are doing it wrong. Very wrong.
So break down Family Office Club for those who don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said earlier, I'm the head of business development for Family Office Club and the managing director for PitchDecks.com, which is the marketing agency that helps companies raise capital. Now, Family Office Club is really a platform. Think of it as a social network for companies that are raising capital and for the investors that are currently looking for deals. A family office, in essence, is really just a private family that has created their own personal bank in order to manage their investments, to manage their legacy, to manage transferring money from one generation to another, to protect all their assets. And they're an incredible investor profile to target when you're raising capital. And if you don't know what a family office is, we won't get too deep into it on this call. But I definitely recommend that if you're watching and listening to this, that you look into what a family office is. But basically, Family Office Club is a club of investors that are looking for deals, that are looking for opportunity, and members pay to be able to network with those ultra high net worth investors. So that's the Family Office Club. That's the event you went to in Miami. We had, that was the Super Summit. So we had probably about 1,000 people there at the Intercontinental in Miami that was, you know, a little over a year ago now. And pitchdecks.com is the branch that we created outside of Family Office Club for firms that are usually worth over $100 million in assets. If they want to actually hire us as their marketing division. So so you can be a member of the club and come to the events, utilize our trainings, utilize our investor directories, or you can hire us on a retainer, on a monthly retainer, and we'll actually build your pitch deck. We'll build your executive summary. We do web development, social media marketing, public relations. So those are pretty much to give you the contrast between the two companies.
Okay. I love that. I'm just finding out about Pitch Decks. That's really cool to see that you guys are working on that. So tell me, man, somebody listening to this right now has a great business idea. Maybe it's just on paper. Maybe it's operating already. What are some go-to tips, that you see as common denominators in the space that, you know, mistakes people make or things that people should be aware of that you usually see?
Yeah, I think that where we can see a lot of similarities in what you and I do. And I think that something that will even help you be able to help people raise capital, because the knowledge you have in marketing can help people raise capital, not just get customers. But it's those things that as marketers we see and we're almost shocked by how common they are, right? Not having a proper logo, using multiple fonts in an email, you know, emailing from a Yahoo email address. You know, small things like that that just already hurt your credibility, hurt your presentation, hurt your salesmanship. On the front end of every deal, you need to have a certain level of salesmanship. You know, you need to go through the same process of as if you were selling a used car, about qualifying the investor, finding out what their needs are, really understanding where they've invested in the past and what their investment behaviors are. It's very similar, especially on that front end. And you'll be surprised how many people come to us with ideas just on paper. If you want to approach investors, best thing to do is have your ideas on more than just paper. You know, have a logo, have a mission statement, have case studies. And if your idea is that good, you have to be willing to put in the work to get that, you know, because sometimes the worst thing that can happen for someone is that they get capital. And if you're, you know, a successful business person, you're smart, you're eloquent, it's not that hard to raise capital because there's always that friends and family around, right? Where you can, you know, you can raise $500,000 into your personal network. You know, just based off your belief and maybe because you've had some success as an executive or a manager before, and you get that money and then you burn it all away because you weren't really clear on what to do with it. Or you had to now put that money into getting a logo and getting a website when that should have just been things that you got taken care of before you got any outside capital.
Okay. Now, so once you go through that process, let's say we're working with Pitch Decks, right? We go through that process. Let's say you get funded. Next step would be to obviously be properly advised on how to use your money or how to spend your money or how to correctly scale out your business. Is that something that's also available as a service through either of the businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. Family Office Club within itself is about 7 other divisions. We're a registered investment advisory firm called Centimillionaire Advisors. So we're registered with the SEC to actually be able to advise and to really point institutional investors in a direction. We can do everything. You know, Richard Wilson, the CEO, has built a community for the past 12 years. He's published over 7 books. And then I launched, when I came in heading up the Family Office Club, we decided to expand and launch the marketing agency that now has about 80 clients. And I've been with PitchDecks.com since the beginning. And so definitely, you know, like they said, there's always a, everybody's got a number, you know? So even if you need us for consulting or you need us to go in there and actually do the heavy lifting, you know, there's always something that we can work out. But just like anything, we want to see, just like any investor wants to see, you got to have skin in the game. You know, having an idea is not going to be enough because you're asking people to put their hard-earned money towards your concept, and you have to be able to bring it to life as much as possible.
Yeah. And also, like, once you do get the money, it doesn't mean you hit the lottery. Like, if anything, it just got a little bit tougher because now you have to make sure that you're responsible with that money. And that's where a lot of people mess up. They'll get access to money. They have no idea how to handle it. They have no financial literacy. So the money flies away. It literally flies away, and it goes away pretty fast if you don't pay attention, and if you don't have it properly registered, and if you're not advised by financial advisors, and you don't have your stuff in order, you could get yourself into some serious trouble. So it's good to be prepared. It's really good to be prepared. Is there any material like online that you recommend, books, maybe on something like this? You mentioned that you guys have around 7 published books. I actually have one and haven't had a chance to read it. It's on my shelf. But I'm interested in it because I want to learn more about family offices, right? I've heard about family offices through multiple streams now. I didn't know about what it was before, but I came to understand it's essentially people with a great amount of wealth who are looking to invest into other ventures and create other streams of revenue. And they put it into a pool, and there's firms that manage that. So if you are able to get in connection with a firm like family offices or any firm of the sort, you will be able to tap into a network of people who are already looking for something. But like Andre says, you have to make sure that you have something flowing, like a pilot, at least a test, something that shows some sort of data, some sort of study that people are searching for this. You have to do your digital study. These days, finding data online is very easy. Google Trends, Facebook, Audience Insights, SEM Rush, any tools, Uber Suggest by Neil Patel, who was on the podcast recently. Many, many tools for you to use and pull data from when presenting your business, when presenting what you're trying to do, presenting your ideal customer avatars, the regions where that product or service is most popular. And you really have to get into the brand because, yes, there have been people that have gotten lucky and have gotten funded just from an idea on a piece of paper. But in the real world, it's not always going to be like that. And you're going to have to move something. You're going to have to get something going because a lot of the times when somebody invests in you, it's not just the idea they're investing into, but sometimes they see promise in you as a young entrepreneur, as an entrepreneur in general, who has drive and passion and fuel, and they know that they could mold that person to become something great, and they're investing in that person's future versus maybe investing in the immediate idea. What do you think about that, Andres?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely you know, true. And like I said, you know, you can raise money through your friends and family round. And that's probably where some of those funds can come in if you're only raising $250,000 or $500,000. But well, like I said earlier, sometimes the worst thing that can happen to a company is that they receive funding. Yeah. Because they should have been able to build some revenue on the merit of their own brand, on the merit of their own belief in their product and their ability to sell that product. And you have to, if you want a high quality investor, right? And we talked, if you're getting capital, we talked a little bit about advisors. My recommendation is find an investor that can be both an investor and an advisor.
Yeah, that's the best.
You know, so that's going to be absolutely crucial. But then you also got to learn how to run a business. You know, and there's three things that investors look out for, you know, and if you're building your pitch deck now, you want to go in this order. You want to first, it's called the three trust curves, right? There's three trust curves that you have to get over in order to get an investor to be on board. And the first one, and it's how you should start your pitch deck, is the team. Is the leadership team, is the management team competent? Are they smart? Can they work together? Do they work hard? Do they really believe in this? Or is this just one of their many projects? So That's the first trust curve. The second is the industry, right? Because it doesn't matter if you're selling VCRs, right? Or brick and mortar rental video stores. It doesn't matter. Those are dead. So is the industry on an uptrend? And third, is your product a good product within that industry? You know, what is your specific product like? So you can have the best product, and you can be in the best timing in terms of where the market's at. But once again, it comes back to square one. Is the team competent? Can they put in the work to scale and grow this company? That's going to be how you always want to start everything. And it starts with you. It's always going to start with you. But those are the three main hurdles you want to get over. And that's why, once again, the branding is so important. And for so many hedge funds, private equity firms, real estate firms, many times, especially if they've already built a pretty good portfolio in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, they may not see branding as being important. You know, it's like, hey, no, we just got to go out there and network and get introductions. But the fact is that the world has changed in terms of marketing, and what you teach is just as applicable to the hedge fund as it is for the e-commerce company. Having a brand, having a mission statement, having those brand guidelines, right? Where your every document's using the same style font as your website, right?
Same color, same
the same color scheme, the same color palette, right? Sticking to those brand guidelines. Those things are important, you know? And many players are changing the game now because they can raise hundreds of millions of dollars through social media and through online marketing and through click funnels. It's, you know, and it's, I always tell these hedge fund guys that have been in the hedge fund game for a long time, with these commercial real estate guys, that if they don't get with it, then they're going to get blockbustered out.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get blockbustered out, just like Netflix overtook them. They're going to get Kodak'd out, right? Remember Kodak cameras?
Yeah.
You know, these are all companies that could have built, Blockbuster could have definitely had the funds to do what Netflix did. You know, Kodak company definitely had the funds to build a great app. They could have built a great app before they went bankrupt. You know, they could have innovated and they could have gotten with the times in order to still be a leader. You look at a company like Legos, and what did they do? They made movies, right? They innovated. They changed their strategy.
Yeah.
And I think that's all applicable now because, yes, you have a good idea. Yes, you feel like if you can just talk to the right investor, to that one right investor, I just need that one right investor, you know, and then you think that just because you need that one investor, having a clear brand, having a one-liner, you know, which I definitely want to talk about, which is very crucial, you know, and having your formal presentation, all those things are important and they should be invested into. And saying, oh, well, I don't have the money to invest into a graphic designer or to get a functional website is not good enough, because if you can't come up with the money to just build a website and to get a graphic designer to make a nice logo and a nice presentation, then how are you going to scale this company to be the $100 million company you say it's going to be?
Hey, I just wanted to jump in real quick to tell you about how to train yourself in organization, balancing your priorities, developing successful habits, and most importantly, having a better mindset. I'm giving free access to resources and materials on business management and self-development. Go to hustleinspireshustle.com/app to get access. That's hustleinspireshustle.com/app. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter at Hustle Inspires Hustle. Okay, let's get back into the episode.
And if I can, I want to talk about the one-liner because it's so crucial. You know, we talk about having a one-liner, right? You start off, do you have a clear brand, and contextual proposition, your contextual value proposition, is it set up? And that's, you know, so I want to give an example of our client, Targacell. They're a stem cell company. And, you know, they came to us, they had awful marketing, they had a one pager at the top. It said, the next generation of stem cell technology. And see, that's a motto. That's not a one-liner. That doesn't tell you why you're unique. Any competitor in their space can say they are the next generation of stem cell delivery. But really, what makes you different? And we developed a one-liner for them that says, a non-invasive stem cell delivery technology. It's a proprietary protein stem cell delivery technology that repairs damaged hearts. It's a proprietary protein stem cell delivery system that repairs damaged hearts. Well, but the whole point, it's in one sentence. It's very clear. And if you're in the world of stem cells, that makes sense. And why do you need that one-liner? Because so many people get, you know, hey, what do you do? What are you raising capital for? What's your company do? And then they go into a 5, 7, 10 minute long spiel. And it's like, whoa, like you never even gave the other party a chance to speak.
Yeah. So like have your elevator pitch ready and understand it. Understand how you could, in a concise way, deliver the message of what your business, service, or organization does so people clearly understand it and you're able to stand out from the competition. What are you doing differently from everybody else and what sets you apart? And then that will give you an idea of what your slogan could be.
And many people, you know, then we ask them and we try to probe and they're like, oh, because we act with honesty, integrity, and we really care for our clients. And it's like, well, that's not unique.
Yeah, that should be a standard already. That's expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that, man. You've been putting in heavy work. You've grown a lot over the last year. You spent a lot of time traveling and meeting with people that are moving some serious, serious money around. Oh, what are the typical figures you see with people that you work? I know you were talking to me about 8 figures, 9 figures, even above. So how has that process been?
Yeah. So during the pandemic alone, our RIA has been able to place over $15 million in capital for our investors. So there's definitely investors looking for deals right now. And I think during the pandemic for our new RIA, that's incredibly impressive. And the last transaction was about 11.5. So of those 15 million, one of them was 11.5. But like I said, a lot of these investors are working with our advisory firm for the first time. So they're placing smaller capital, $500,000, $1 million. But in our rooms and the type of deals that I've seen happen at our events and that I've heard that introductions at our events have created, we're talking things you never even think about. It's interesting. It's part of what really excited me about working with this company. But we're talking about people that buy mountains because the mountains are full of copper, potentially, right? And those are $100 million deals to buy a mountain, right? In order to be able to mine it for resources. And even something as weird as, you know, powdered milk, right?
Yeah.
The milk has to be dehydrated in a factory. So, you know, we had a guy that was selling his milk dehydration factory, you know? So all of these things, it's those are big deals. Those are, you know, $50 million, $100 million deals. And then obviously we see a lot of the bigger deals come from commercial and multifamily real estate as well. But, you know, we also see the smaller deals. You know, we see, you know, small places. You know, it's being a retail... I meet a lot of retail investors too, which I think has really been one of the biggest shifts in my life. Because meeting these retail investors that, you know, they're very illiquid. You know, they don't have a lot of cash. And it's because maybe they're able to every year put aside $400,000, you know? Let's say they made $500,000, but $450,000 goes into their investment portfolio. And that's been very fascinating because it's really altered the way that I handle money and the way that I see my money and the way I look at my money. You know, if you're willing to, you know, have a big year, you know, and make $1 million, but only live off, you know, 200 or 150,000 of it in order to really invest the rest and what that can do to your life in 10 years.
Yeah. You have to think of, like, when that type of money starts coming in And when you're looking at numbers like that, or any numbers in general, you really have to start thinking about your cost of living and like how much are you making versus how much are you spending? Like, you don't, it's nice to have luxuries, and it's nice to make yourself feel proud for the things that you want to get yourself. But a lot of the times people buy things to impress other people or to give people a perception of them. But you soon come to realize that that's just a waste of money, and that what you really need to do is you need to concentrate on creating generational wealth that continues to compound and continues to grow for you. So you're not working for the money, and your life isn't set up in a way where you have to work a certain amount of hours to make a certain amount of money. Your money starts paying you eventually. And that's what you want to get to. You want to get to the point where your money is making you money in whatever ways it's making you money, not that you're always trying to catch up or getting yourself into debt or buying a car you shouldn't be buying or renting that really expensive apartment just because you want to have a nice apartment. There's a time and a place for everything. And if you give yourself the proper time to set up a nice foundation for yourself in your life, you're going to have the opportunity to do absolutely everything, but you have to get the core things right first. And it's very important to be able to watch your money. I love hearing those stories, like you're saying, Andres, of people who will make like $1 million and will live on 150. It's difficult to see that much money and not want to touch it or buy dumb shit or go do something you've always wanted to do or take a bunch of people somewhere. It's, you can't blame the people that do it, but you have to catch yourself.
And the type of, once again, generational wealth, you know, it's in the Four Agreements, you know, Juan Miguel Ruiz talks about how that tribe used to always think, every decision they made, they always thought, what is the effect seven generations from now for this decision that I make today? And that's what a lot of these ultra wealthy are fighting for. They're fighting because 85% of wealth is lost between the first and the third generation.
Yep.
So you have to really educate your grandchildren on what it took for their last name to have that level of wealth. Because if they lose sight of that, I mean, think about it. If you have four kids and they each get married, the family goes from four people to eight. One divorce can take a nice chunk out of that family's wealth.
Yeah.
And then if there's a grandchild, right, and each pair has a grandchild, you have a family of 16, 20 people that are entitled to parts of that estate, depending on how that will is written or not written.
Yep.
It's fascinating. So it really just completely changed the way I looked at things. You know, changed the way I looked at entrepreneurship, because even, you know, just the way people spend their money kind of recklessly, people can be entrepreneurs very recklessly in terms of not thinking about the investment game. You know, it pays a lot more to teach people how to be an entrepreneur than how to be an investor. Because through entrepreneurship, you can build that whole, let me build something from nothing. While investing does take something, you got to have some capital if you want to see some gains. And it's when you look at like, okay, that you don't look at that $100 bill like a $100 bill. Right. I think many people have done the game, but if they haven't, you know, it's would you take $5 million from me right now? Or if I gave you a penny today and doubled that penny every day, so 2 cents on day two, 4 cents on day three, 8 cents on day four, 16 cents on day five, by day 31, you keep doubling and you do it on your calculator, by day 31, you have over $10 million.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. You don't look at that penny like a penny anymore. Look at what, if once it starts compounding, once it starts generating interest, right? And it's just boom, like, okay, my goals are different now. It's not about my net worth. It's about my net worth, but it's about my portfolio and what it's generating for me. Right. If you have $10 million generating you 10% a year, right, that's $1 million a year.
Yeah. S&P 500. We'll get real close to that.
You know, and it's 10%, 10% on 10 million. So you got 10 million is bringing you 10% a year. Boom. If you have a year that made you 7%, you still did good. If you have a year that did 15, 20%, then amazing. But now that money's really working for you. And if you ever lose a chunk of it, you still got several million. And it's really just really shifted the way I think and really driven a passion for me to really master investing, being able to not necessarily time the market, but be able to actually do due diligence on where good deals can potentially be.
And especially right now, I think there's a lot of people during the quarantine that were home and probably weren't being too productive with their time. But there was a lot of people who were being extremely productive during that time. And I know there will be a lot of great things coming out over the next year and in the coming years that were triggered by the events that happened over the last few months globally. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm looking forward to seeing positive things happen. I know they're coming. I know it's been a challenging year for a lot of people, but just one thing to understand is give yourself the tools to learn. Give yourself the tools to learn what you need in order to become successful or to be good or to take care of yourself and your family. Educate yourself. Read. You're doing great. If you're listening to this, you're already on the right path. Andres, where could they find more information? Talk to me about pitch decks.
Shoot me an email at andres@familyoffices.com. Andres@familyoffices.com. And I'll make sure to just send you guys over the books, capital raising, the single family office, how to start a single family office. So happy to send you guys those books. If you guys shoot me an email, familyoffices.com obviously would be the website, pitchdecks.com, privateequity.com. Those are all places that you can find us and definitely LinkedIn. You know, that's where we really like to communicate. But shoot me the email. I would love to send you guys over the books and really open up your eyes to this really amazing world of capital raising.
Alrighty, guys, you heard it. This is the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. Alex Quinn, Andres Ospina. See you guys on the next episode.
Thanks, Alex. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could share, leave a review, and subscribe to the show. Visit hustleinspireshustle.com/app for more free resources, event invitations, and online courses to empower your personal and financial success. Learn about marketing, finances, business development, branding, strategic partnerships, and much more. If you're looking to further connect, check me out on Instagram or LinkedIn at Alex Quinn. That's AlexQuin. See you on the next episode.